I'm telling these tears, go and fall away, fall away. Oh, may the last one burn into flames. Freedom, freedom, I can't move. Freedom, what's up, Wisconsin? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. It's so good to be back with all of you. I thought I wasn't going to miss it. I missed it.
Yeah, it does become a part of your life. You kind of just go.
It really does.
You know what? I stepped away for a little bit, and every day I still woke for a while. I woke up and I was like, "What am I going to talk? Oh, I can't talk to everyone today."
Yeah. Well, welcome to be back with all of you. I especially missed it because so much happens, right? It's decades and days. It feels like we had Vice President Harris's announcement of her VP pick with Governor Tim Walz. We'll talk about that this week. I want to talk about some of the Trump meltdowns, their overall flat-footedness. We got the DNC coming up next week. I'm going to be there all week with you. We're going to have some great guests. We're going to have some great conversations. We've got a destabilizing situation in the Mideast, potentially. I mean, just a few things happening. Ukraine actually fighting an offensive across Russian lines now. They're actually in Russia. All of this is happening. I got to reach out to Professor Yoshiko Herrera, see if we can have a little chat with her about what that means. So
you're saying wars don't just stop because they fell out of the cycle?
Yeah, it doesn't work like that. Weird.
Wow.
Got a potential peace deal on the table in Gaza, whether it's going to... so much happening. But the immediate business of the day is that there happens to be a really, really important election tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Have you made a plan to vote tomorrow?
Yes. Have you made a plan to vote? I early voted. I just like to get it done. So did that on Friday. I'm going to talk about that today. We've got a great show. I've got two of the candidates that folks in Milwaukee County may see on their ballot coming in today. But here's the theme between these two candidates that we're going to have on the show today. It is my personal belief, and I've talked about this a lot on the show, that change is really good in government.
Usually, yes.
Change in most organizations is good, especially leadership change. And one of the things that I hate about both parties is that, especially in local and statewide elections, there tends to be this presumption that the old guard gets to keep whatever elected office they have for as long as they want. And that, if anybody dares challenge some established politician, that's not good. I think that's completely wrong-headed. I think it's as wrong in local government as it is at the state level, that bringing in new blood, people from potentially even the private sector that have different sorts of experience, can really help invigorate government. And we need fresh blood. That's not to say that I devalue long-term public servants that are experts in what they do. Both things are true at the same time.
They just need to be challenged every now and then. And even if the new people don't win, I bring up Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders didn't win the nomination, but he got enough of a vote to go and make Biden go, gee, I'm going to need to move to the left to go and get a bunch of votes.
It changes the conversation. And I think the two candidates that we're going to have with us today here on the Maggie Dawn Show are case in point of that. Very refreshing. And I don't know how they're going to do tomorrow. One, they're both contested Democratic primaries. One is for a countywide office, the treasurer. We're going to talk about that. One is for an assembly seat. Now, it's an open assembly seat, but one of the Democrats running for the assembly seat has been in public office, in my opinion, for far, far, far too long. And it's sort of a seat. It appears as if she thinks she's just sort of owed the seat. Turns out I have a little bit of experience with both of these candidacies and these seats because I worked with some of these people for a while at Milwaukee County. So it will be juicy as ever and always. And we wouldn't be talking about the election tomorrow, which ostensibly looks like a primary, but what we should be calling it is a constitutional election tomorrow, because Republicans have again cheated to try to slip one past you, and it's on the ballot tomorrow. So you're not, you got make a plan to vote, got to get there. If you don't know where to go vote, you can go to myvote.wi.gov. You can even check out sample ballots for whatever your ward or district is at myvote.wi.gov. So I'm going to talk about those two ballot referenda, the constitutional election that you're going to see on the ballot tomorrow, because it's dumb what the Republicans have done. But last and certainly not least, we're going to have those two candidates on, Ted Chisholm, who's running for Milwaukee County Treasurer. We're also going to have Amelia Heredia, who's running for a state assembly seat against current Milwaukee County Board Supervisor Saquana Taylor. We'll have all that good dish. We're then going to have dish from Marquette pollster Charles Franklin. Awesome. Always great to have Charles with us. We're going to have that this hour. And of course, folks, I wouldn't leave you, given that I think one of the most interesting Democratic primary contests in the state is on tomorrow's ballot between current Assemblyperson Ryan Clancy and fellow Democrat, though Ryan Clancy is not a Democrat, he's a socialist who likes to call himself a Democrat because he can get elected that way, against an actual Democrat, Jared Anderson. That one's good because guess what? I worked with Ryan Clancy for a while. I have some thoughts on that race as well.
I'm interested to hear them.
Yeah. So you don't want to go anywhere. Let's talk about these ballot referendums, shall we? We shall.
Yeah, let's get on it.
So, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I submit to you that we should actually have a constitutional amendment that says this. If legislative actors or the legislative branch attempt numerous times to get a law passed and it fails or gets vetoed, they don't get to then present it as a constitutional amendment to bypass that whole, you know, how a bill becomes a law thing. Okay, so the first problem here is that Republicans in the state of Wisconsin are cheating yet again. And I'll get to the substance of it, but I just, and if you're a Republican, please keep your ears, your mind, and your heart open for a second. And imagine that the shoe is on the other foot. What happened here was the legislature tried, I think, three times to pass a law that effectively changes how emergency federal funding gets spent in the state. And every time they attempted to do this, their efforts failed because the governor vetoed it. Now, we'll set aside for the moment the fact that our state legislature is probably the most gerrymandered, the most unfair in the nation. We'll set that aside, though it's important. But it just, you try to pass a law and it fails because the governor vetoed it. Should be the end of the story, right? Nope. Wisconsin has this little quirk of law that basically says the legislature, without consent of the governor, can get a constitutional amendment on a ballot. So you forget checks and balances, folks. We'll just go right to the constitutional amendments. This isn't the way it's supposed to work. Now, turning specifically to what's on the ballot tomorrow, or if you're early voting or had early voted, what you saw on your ballot, here's what's also interesting. The legislature passed a state statute decades ago that allocated to the governor additional powers, these additional budgetary powers. So they stick with me. I know it's minutiae, but it's important here. So the way that we ended up where we are now is that Wisconsin's formerly much more bipartisan, much fairer state government passed a law that years ago gave power to the governor to be able to basically unilaterally allocate federal emergency funding in response to natural disasters, public health emergencies, you know, things like COVID. So why is it appropriate now to undo what was a law adopted in the ordinary course, you know, how a bill becomes law, passed by the legislature, signed by the governor? Why is it okay now to undo what was normal legislation through a constitutional amendment? We don't put that kind of stuff in constitutions. That's not where it goes. So it's wrong on a number of fronts. It's a cheat by Republicans because they tried to do it the way it should be done and they failed. So they bypass our balance of powers, right? They bypass the governor's office and go straight to a constitutional referendum. They want to amend the Constitution to undo what was a law adopted decades ago in the ordinary course that was just fine under Governor Tommy Thompson, a law that was just fine when the governor was Scott Walker. But now, it's odd.
My favorite part is that historically about 20% of the people vote in this election, in this primary in the summer. So that means a constitutional amendment, which normally...
Kind of a big deal, you
would think.
Kind of
a big deal if you're going to change the Constitution.
We want as many people weighing in on this critical... Let's do it with the one with the lowest turnout.
No.
That's how you know... I was going to get there, but you summarized it so well. Big cheating on all fronts.
Well, you know what? You've been gone. I've been talking about this for a while, and now I'm excited and fired up, and I'm really wanting to get you out there.
Folks, you got Fancy Brian. He's another day or year older. It was his birthday on Friday.
Yeah, on Thursday.
Excuse me.
But now I'm like 10 years older at least.
Well, all of the changes, the decades and days, that's what's going on here. You got Fancy Brian and me, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to us live from downtown Waukesha across the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the referendums to change the constitution of the state that you'll see on the ballot tomorrow. Watch out, everybody, because those dirty GOP tricksters are trying to pull one over on you. The discussion continues just after these important messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
Hey, I'ma keep on running and I don't quit on themselves.
No!
Nobody does it quite like Brian and I do it. You're listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We're talking about the election tomorrow because on it you're going to find little cheater pumpkin eater courtesy of the Wisconsin GOP. They're trying to induce you to vote in favor of constitutional amendments. And again, Brian pointed out brilliant, right before the break. That you would think if we're changing our state's constitution, that we might want to ensure that as many Wisconsinites as possible participate in that critical debate about the balance of powers. Especially when it is about how Wisconsin state government will decide to spend federal emergency dollars that come into the state. Kind of important. No. The GOP tricksters, they're putting it on tomorrow's election ballot because it has one of the lowest turnouts. And when they have lower turnouts, they tend to get what they like. It's basically it. So you know they're cheating because this stuff shouldn't be in the Constitution anyways. It has been like this for decades. It was fine under the way the law currently is. It's fine under Governor Thompson, fine under Governor Walker. All of a sudden, now it's a problem. That should tell you it's a cheat. The fact that they're trying to stick it on a primary where there's like a 20% voter turnout, that should tell you it's a cheat. The fact that they tried to do this two or three times, you know, in the ordinary course with our three branches of government, you know, and they couldn't do it that way. So they went to this referenda approach. That tells you it's a cheat. And I haven't even told you what the thing's about, other than it being about federal emergency fund.
It's a reaction to COVID. They're mad at COVID, and they're mad that COVID got money, and they're mad that COVID exists, or that COVID. But
they're mad. Here's what they're mad about: science.
Yeah, but let's pretend it's not COVID. Let's pretend there's no COVID, because I don't know if you know this, but this whole summer there's been a lot of tornadoes in Wisconsin. Lots of tornadoes. So if
flooding,
because you know,
PFAS.
By the way, lots of things. And the federal government goes and says, here's emergency funding. And when it stopped, because people are bickering whether they should or shouldn't, or which town should get more things, rather than the governor, it screws everybody.
Absolutely. So what happened here was the state of Wisconsin got hundreds of millions of dollars, just like every state did, from the federal government in response to COVID. Because of this law that's been on the books for decades, the governor had fairly broad authority to unilaterally, that is without the legislature, the gerrymandered, the unfair, not one person, one vote, to do that unilaterally without the legislature weighing in. Now, this isn't across the whole of the Wisconsin budget, which is billions and billions of dollars, which, by the way, only happens biannually. This is just about basically federal emergency funds that have some discretion built in as to how they're going to be spent. And again, it was fine for the governor to have these powers under Governor Thompson. It was fine when it was Governor Walker, but all of a sudden it's Governor Evers, and it's a problem. So this is all GOP hangover, alleged garbage grievance about the fact that Tony Evers, when he got the federal COVID dollars, talked to scientists and public health experts and epidemiologists and deployed the funds according to what the best experts in the field were telling him to do to try to save Wisconsin lives. And then how to support small businesses in the state after we started to reopen a bit. That's what they're ticked off about. Because, you know, just ask President Trump, all you need to do is drink a little bleach, please don't do that, and put a little sunshine on your body and the COVID will be clear. Or according to Senator Ron Johnson, that Mensa member from Wisconsin, you just need a little mouthwash to cure COVID. No, because the governor, again, listened to scientific experts, deployed the federal emergency relief to try to save Wisconsin lives. And keep in mind this. One of the reasons that they're real ticked off about that is that in the state's most populous counties, where there happen to be more black and brown folks, we know that COVID took an especially harsh impact, an inequitable impact, a disparate impact. The governor took that into consideration. They didn't like that. But when it happens to be a rural town or county and those people are being more acutely impacted, do you think Republicans would raise an eyebrow at any of that? No. So I'll summarize here. It's a cheat on every single level. It's frankly racist and it's anti-science. So in summary then, I'm advocating for a no vote on the two constitutional amendments that you will find on tomorrow's ballot. What about you, Brian?
I'm going to say no as well, and I'm going to recommend everybody else say no. And also, I would recommend maybe, you know, pushing it back to, you know, a public thing in November, or maybe even a larger group of people, or maybe an entire giant way of having to make it harder to go and amend the Constitution than a 20% or less.
We need the constitutional amendment to change how the Constitution can be amended so that Republicans can't cheat, because that's what they do. One of my favorite people, and I know yours, Fancy Brian, Coach Al, who was one of my coaches back at Rufus King High School for the College Bound in the 90s. Coach Al, what do you have to say about all this? Good to see your name on my call list.
First, I want to say amen. And I was just wondering if they were using another tape of you, because you're never there when I call.
I'm here today, Al. I'm here. I'm back from vacation.
I don't know how you get all of these vacations And I've worked over 60 years, and I've had two.
Well, Al, you got to use them or lose them. You know what I'm saying, brother? You need that vacation. You've earned that vacation. Great to hear from you, Al. Yeah, I'm back. I needed a breath after the RNC. I basically do two jobs for the price of one here at Civic Media. I'm their top lawyer, and I do this show every day because I love it. It is really what gets my blood pumping. Al, I take it you are voting no.
Thank you for the comment.
Yes, I take it you're voting no tomorrow, are you?
I voted a week ago, and I voted no. And the biggest problem we have is how do we get balance in the legislature? We got to get some of those people out of the legislature and get balance between the two parties so that we stop all of this garbage.
Couldn't agree with you more, Al. We are slowly but surely marching back to normalcy here in the state, and I believe our nation as well. So excited to have VP Harris run for the presidency. Let's get back to normal. Less weird, more normal. More kind, less hate. You know, basic things. We can agree on those as Americans and Wisconsinites. I love you, Coach Al. Great to hear from you. Do not go anywhere, anybody. We've got candidate for Milwaukee County Treasurer Ted Chisholm is up next. We're going to be talking about why we need to see a change in government from time to time. I'm Maggie Dawn. That is Fancy Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Your farm updated news are next.
We have seen a small increase in deaths, which is a good thing.
Why not gargle?
What is up, Wisconsin? Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. He is Brian Kelly. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network, coming to you live from downtown Waukesha across the state. Our good old, our regular stations will, of course, be carrying the Brewers-Dodgers game tonight. And we've got four tickets that we're going to give away during the show sometime today for that very game tonight. First pitch at AmFam Field in downtown Milwaukee is at 7:10, playing the dreaded big money Dodgers after a heartbreaking loss yesterday to the Cincinnati Reds. I was there with my dad. It was lovely. Not a better day to watch baseball than yesterday at AmFam Field. So if you want to win yourself some tickets, you're going to want to stay tuned. I'm not going to tell you exactly when I'm going to give them away. We'll have a wee bit of easy trivia, and you can take home four tickets to the Brewers-Dodgers game tonight at AmFam Field, first pitch 7:10. And of course, you'll be sitting in the lovely Civic Media loge box seats, which are terrific.
And you get to say the word loge.
Loge. It's like luge.
It's like Robert Loggia.
Loggia. Yeah. Anyways, if you are a baseball fan, couldn't be a better day to go to the game than this afternoon. Four tickets to give away. Keep it locked here on the Maggie Dawn Show. But next, I'm really, really excited to bring back to the show my good friend, Ted Chisholm, who is running to be Milwaukee County's treasurer. Welcome back, Ted. How are you?
Thank you so much, Maggie. It's a pleasure to be back on with you. And we're in the last full day of the campaign, and things are going really well.
Glad to hear it. Let's just jump right to the heart of the matter. There are about three things very specifically that I wanted to ask you today, Ted. Ted, you're running against Dave Cullen. Dave Cullen is a former state representative. He was in the legislature for many years, kind of bounced around government in a couple of different roles, landed in the treasurer's office a while back. He's been there for a while. Most would consider Dave to be a pretty centrist Democrat. It's not a particularly partisan office. You know, you follow state law and you're doing the job, and the state law is pretty specific. We'll get into what the treasurer does more in a moment. But why should someone who has perhaps cast a ballot for Dave many times in their life consider, or why should they vote for you this time? Why not Dave and why Ted?
Absolutely. And that's a fair question anytime somebody's challenging an opponent. And the simple answer is this: the treasurer's office is not providing the quality of service that our community deserves. And under the current leadership in that office, the approach to management and administration is extremely hands-off. My approach would be very different. I come to this from a background of working as a hands-on leader in county government. As you know, Maggie, we served together at the county. I was the chief of staff to then Sheriff Ernell Lucas, managing about a $49 million budget. I was then the senior administrator for management, finance, and strategy for our clerk of circuit court's office, managing about a $42 million budget and about $20 million in court system invested funds. And I'm running for this office because we're seeing challenges across the board. Number one, the office's primary customers, which are actually our suburban municipalities that rely on the county treasurer to collect delinquent property taxes, are frustrated by the level of service they're getting. Challenges that have arisen in the past with the software that the office uses is just one example. But more importantly, when we're looking at actual community service, we're not seeing the kind of proactive leadership that we deserve. And if I'm elected, just as one example, we have buildings that are sitting out there in property tax delinquency right now, in one example that I know of, for 12 years, where the county has taken no successful action to get that property restored back into the tax base. And on the flip side, we have folks who fall into tax delinquency who are homeowners, struggling to make ends meet and needing some assistance from the county to work out reasonable payment plans as early as possible. And so if I'm elected, I'm not going to be a hands-off administrator delegating work to a deputy or to other staff in the office. I will work with that team, augment that team with my own administrative experience, and be a hands-on contributing member to the work of this very small 10-person office, helping taxpayers, addressing vacant and abandoned delinquent properties, working with our municipalities to make sure their needs are met.
Thanks, Ted. I'll come back to the 10-person office bit in a moment, but I wanted to follow up briefly. Here's what I have not understood, perhaps. I don't get why this isn't happening, and you referred to it. If I were the treasurer, whether that be in Brown County, way up in Rhineland, working for a municipality, a county treasurer, state treasurer, whatever it would be, here's what I'd be doing. When it comes to delinquent taxes, I would have them tiered in, you know, kind of like a triage, if you will. And the large corporate delinquent property taxpayers with the biggest property tax bills would be the ones that I would be most aggressively going after for delinquencies. And then, you know, beneath that, the corporate taxpayers that have been delinquent for many years, right? So the largest bills, then the corporate landowners that have been delinquent for numerous years, I'd go after the landlords, the slumlords. We got a bunch of them in the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County. And then finally, when I got to residential, I would have them prioritized so that the people with the properties with the lowest values were the very last delinquencies that I would ever get to, if I did at all. And I would also be flagging delinquencies, as you stated, that are multiple years old. In other words, I would come up with some sort of objective triage system to help me prioritize in the best interest for the taxpayer. Because, of course, what happens is, if we don't go after delinquent property taxes, that effectively is a shifting of tax burden from those folks onto people who do pay their property taxes on time. That is, in effect, what happens. Why isn't that being, I don't get it. Is that not being done? It seems completely obvious to me.
Well, and the process seems less than transparent is the other challenge that I've run into. And that's true across the board with the treasurer's office. Just as one example, let's say you wanted to look at all the properties that are currently delinquent on their taxes in the city of Milwaukee. You can go to the city's website and find that list. If you wanted to get that same information for delinquent properties that are under the control of the county treasurer, or in terms of enforcement, you couldn't find that on the county's website. And just to kind of give a little real brief background there, what happens is that for the suburban municipalities in Milwaukee County, so every jurisdiction except the city of Milwaukee, if you're a taxpayer in that municipality and you do not make the January 31st property tax deadline, if your property tax payment has not been made by July 31st, what happens is that by law, Milwaukee County actually comes in and buys your tax certificate from the municipality. So let's say you live in the village of Brown Deer. If that tax payment is not in by July 31st, so 7 months in, 6 months in, the county will come in, make that payment, and then actually acquire the debt, essentially. So from that point forward, the property taxpayer owes the outstanding amount to Milwaukee County. And so that's putting the county on the hook for that funding as well. And so when I say properties under the control of the treasurer, I should really say properties that are on the treasurer's list for enforcement. And in those scenarios, absolutely, Maggie, what should happen is that there should be a tiered enforcement approach, not just one that the office administers, but one that's transparent and explained as such to the public. So the office's policies and approach to handling these properties are standardized, and that folks who rely on the office for this enforcement, like our municipalities, are aware of the order in which the treasurer will be pursuing enforcement. So for example, if I'm an economic development specialist in the city of South Milwaukee, and I have a property right in my central business district, which they do, that has not paid its property taxes since 2012, and it's dilapidated, there's visible rubble in the back of the building, and it's right next to a property that the city is trying to redevelop, I would want to know from the county treasurer, what is your plan to get this property foreclosed on so that it can be restored back into the tax base and made available for reuse? And I think it's unfortunate that we're not seeing the kind of active leadership there that's really deserved and required by our community to take action on properties like this. And at the same time, I think we also want to have clear lines of communication. And I've heard my opponent, when he's appeared in front of our county board, say that in response to questions about vacant or abandoned buildings, that he sort of relies on the municipalities to notify him, or he relies on other elected officials to make those notifications. That's not acceptable, and that's not the approach I will take. If the county treasurer has the enforcement responsibility for this type of property, it really is incumbent upon the treasurer to be investigating whether the properties on his or her list are in a condition that requires enforcement, so that you don't have some dilapidated building just sitting out there festering.
So why isn't Dave doing this? Like, Dave Cullen is a really nice guy. You're a really nice guy, Ted. This isn't about personalities. It's not about Dave's long service to the public sector. It's not about that. You've also served in the public sector, right? What's keeping Dave from doing these things? I don't get it. Like, this would seem really obvious to me. Why isn't this happening?
Well, and I think it's just a matter of philosophies in terms of how this office is run. And this is not just on Dave. There's sort of a history with offices like county treasurer, whether it's the county clerk, register of deeds, you name it, where historically these offices have been viewed as what are called political sinecures, offices where there isn't necessarily a lot of engaged work expected of the elected office holder, who's often a person who's either a longtime politician, someone who's been kind of on the periphery of politics and is looking for an elected position later in their career. And, you know, there's different backgrounds that folks have coming into this type of position. And my approach to this office will be very different. I'm coming from the perspective and the background of being a hands-on administrator in county government. So when I served in the clerk of court's office, I was one of the two deputies to the elected clerk, and I was overseeing not only the office's financial operations, but also jury management, IT services, functioning in essence as the business manager for a 300-person significant county department. And so coming with that background, I'm not looking for an office to just simply, you know, cool my heels in. I'm looking to be able to continue serving our community, engaging in the types of reforms that we successfully implemented in the sheriff's office in the wake of the David Clark years, in the clerk of circuit court's office to get that agency's financial house into order after a period where it was not. And I think those similar improvements, when we're talking about property tax enforcement, when we're talking about customer service, can easily be made in the treasurer's office. So you were talking, Maggie, about a tiered system. If I'm elected treasurer, we'll actually go even beyond that and set up a geographic tiered system where our suburban municipalities will be grouped into geographic sectors based on population, so west, southwest, southeast, and northeast. And what we'll do is we'll designate members of the team, myself included, to take responsibility for the list in each of those regions, working through them, reaching out to homeowners who may be on that list and need some assistance working out payment plans, understanding their options and the challenges that may be ahead if we can't get something worked out. But on the flip side, then reaching out to building inspectors, to local elected leaders, and ironing out plans to get some of these properties enforced upon and restored back into the tax base if they currently aren't and are sitting there vacant or unused. So that's the kind of leadership mentality I will bring, is the mentality of somebody who has been engaged in constant day-to-day administration during my tenure, first as chief of staff, and then more recently, before this campaign, as the senior administrator in the clerk of courts.
Yeah, it's called change management. How do we do this better? And let's constantly be in a cycle of improvement. When we come back, I'm going to ask you why you think that's not happening. We're going to talk about the fact that the incumbent for this position, Dave Cohen, tried to get himself a 30%+ raise a few months ago. What's up with that? And then I'll ask you the question that a lot of people are asking, last but certainly not least. I'm joined this half hour by candidate for Milwaukee County Treasurer Ted Chisholm, my friend and now yours. Stay put, everybody. We're going to be talking more after these brief messages here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. I'm joined this half hour by candidate for the Milwaukee County Treasurer's Office, Ted Chisholm. His name may be familiar to you. Indeed, his father is current Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. Ted, I'll just share this brief personal analogy with you. My dad worked in the City of Milwaukee's Comptroller's Office for many years. I know you know this, but in case our listeners don't. And I overlapped with my dad. We worked in different departments, right? He was in the Comptroller's Office. I was in the City Attorney's Office for about a year and a half. That was really cool. Your dad is retiring. You may be re-entering county service. I know you worked with him. You overlapped, though, in totally different roles for a little while. Very cool. A family who has dedicated their life to public service. I certainly applaud that. Just want to give a shout out to your dad for me, Ted. I really appreciate everything.
Absolutely.
John's done for the county. You mentioned before you were talking about setting up these regions to try to prioritize properly delinquent property taxpayers for potential enforcement, which is, frankly, the treasurer's core job duty. And you mentioned, as you were describing that, that you yourself would take responsibility for some of those regions and some of the lists of folks you got to call and visiting properties and all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to ask you, because I've never been able to get a beat on it, and I worked at the county for 7.5 years. What does the incumbent do all day? Because I have no idea. I have yet to figure that one out.
I mean, that's a good question. I'm not entirely sure myself. I think that's a question that's always fair to ask, though, in an election like this. I mean, we want to know what our elected officials are doing and what are they able to report to the public that they've accomplished when it is election time and we're making a decision as to whether to reelect them or not. In this case, this isn't an office that's often had challengers to incumbent treasurers, but in this case, obviously we do. And, and I'll just say real briefly, when we hear my opponent talk about why he should be reelected, he generally cites three things. He cites the number of delinquent property taxes he's collected, which, again, that's a core function of the job. That would be like a candidate or an incumbent sheriff saying they should be reelected because they've investigated X number of crimes. I mean, that's a core responsibility of the office. But his other points that he's made, he's talked about unprecedented investment yields or unusual investment yields in 2023 that, when you dig into it, were the result of the county having federal aid dollars due to COVID-19 that were available to be invested. And then he's cited other debt service reserve amounts that were unusually increased in 2023 that, again, by the treasurer's own admission, will likely cool down and go back to normal. So that's not necessarily something I would hang my hat on. But then the next next sort of thing that he cites is that he invested $250,000 in Columbia Savings and Loan, which is a storied community institution in Milwaukee County. Wonderful institution. It's the first and now only Black-owned financial institution in the state. And my question has always been, the treasurer touts this investment, which was made in 2024, this year. My question has always been, why, if this was a priority of the treasurer's, did it take this long for that investment to be made? Why was it not made when he first took office in late 2014 or in any of the years subsequent to that until now? And I think those are questions that I've certainly asked and raised. But I think your question's a good one, Maggie. When we look back at that almost 10-year period, and we don't see the kind of accomplishments that would make someone think, wow, the treasurer's office is really engaged in our community. It's really getting some fantastic work done with our municipal leaders. It's fair to say, well, are we maybe due for a change in leadership that's going to be more engaged and also more accountable?
I can just say this. As a native Milwaukeean, and I bet folks listening across the state will nod their heads at this, it has been a tradition in Wisconsin that people stay in these positions forever. I'll just use Mayor Henry Meyer was the longest sitting mayor in the country. I think he still holds that record. We had a similar situation with your father's predecessor in the district attorney's office, E. Michael McCann, I think was the longest sitting elected district attorney in the country. In my opinion, I hope we have finally reached a time, regardless of which way your jurisdiction may lean, where we understand that change is really important in government, that no one holds these positions as of right, that we should be testing these elected officials every cycle. We should be asking the questions that you've been pointing out, Ted. Not only do I want to know why it's taken a decade for Treasurer Cullen to make that investment in that Black-owned bank in the city of Milwaukee, I'd like to know why it's only $250,000. The treasurer has authority over millions of dollars worth of investments. And to tout investment returns when you talk about the treasurer's office is stupid if you know anything about what the treasurer does, because the treasurer's scope of discretion when investing funds is like zero. It's basically defined in state statute how they have to invest the money. So talking about returns is just silly. I want to ask you, Ted, to address two things. You only have about 2 minutes. You can take them on either order. The incumbent, Treasurer Cullen, tried to get himself a 30% raise. Please address that. And the second thing is, you do not have a college degree, sir. Dave does. Does it matter?
Certainly. So I'll address both. So the question about the pay raise, that was something that was advanced through the county board initially as like a 36% pay raise over the next four-year term. That was eventually whittled back to about a 10%, 11% pay raise. I have made a commitment, and I will honor that commitment, that I will not accept a salary raise above the existing approximately $91,000 salary for the treasurer's office. And the reason for that is that I don't believe that an office that supervises, or a position that supervises just 9 employees, needs to be getting paid so much more than the rank and file customer-facing public servants who perform the lion's share of the office's work assisting its customers. Now, as to the... Oh, go ahead, Maggie, sorry.
No, go ahead. As to the college degree, I want to get it in. You absolutely got a minute.
Absolutely. So, and Treasurer Cullen's made a lot of hay over this issue, and so folks have probably seen that in the media coverage on the race. And yes, so I went to college at McAllister College in St. Paul while I was working in consulting at the time, working with elected officials actually around the country at the time. And I stepped down from both of those pursuits. I left about halfway through my third year at McAllister, and then from my consulting work to accept appointment as the chief of staff to Sheriff Ernell Lucas here in Milwaukee County. So obviously at the time it was a difficult decision to make, but it's something that I'm glad I did. It was a privilege to be able to serve our community, to help reform the sheriff's office, and I'm proud of the on-the-job experience I've amassed managing tens of millions of dollars in county funds and investments, and I'm ready to apply that experience if elected.
That's Ted Chisholm, candidate for Milwaukee County Treasurer, who learned by doing. I'm Maggie Dawn. Stay with us. News, weather, and sports are next.